Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
What's up, everybody? This is Carrick with ACG, and welcome to another Why video where I invite you into Casa de Carrick and we talk about games, we talk about development, we talk about behind the scenes, any questions you guys have, and we do have a ton of questions. Now, sometimes I do these Why videos where I cover one particular question, but because it's been a while since I've done so, I took some from Twitter, some from Facebook, some from patrons, some from Discord, and so forth. And as always, I want to thank everybody who's a supporter in whatever way you are, whether you just tweet it, you follow me on Anchor, you review me on iTunes, what have you. It doesn't matter. I want to say thanks to everybody. So let's just jump straight into this. The first one is, why do you think your videos keep getting demonetized? This is from Sun, and I believe this was a Facebook question, and this has come up many times. I really honestly don't know, especially because some of the videos, including many that I've actually got demonetized recently, have no cussing, they have no innuendo in them, they have no jokes of any kind. I'm sure that's some kind of algorithm that's actually doing that. I've also noticed occasionally the algorithm has really treated the reviews weird when it comes to their listing. Sometimes you'll notice that the percentage and engagements and the number of views are very high, but I've noticed that the videos are pushed down a little bit in the search algorithm. Now, that could also be because I consistently am doing podcasts and joking around about different things, whether it be politics, whether it be flat earther kind of weird jokes. And I don't know if maybe the algorithm's trying to learn what's a joke and what's not, what exactly is occurring, but that might be it. I'm not 100% sure. I'll continue to do the videos like I do the videos and use Patreon and other means to get that support. But yeah, YouTube is definitely very uncreator friendly right now. So I get that question and it's a good one. What is your favorite headphones? And this is from Sean. What's your favorite pair of headphones? I would say I really do like, for comfort, just sheer comfort, are the Cloud Series by HyperX. They have different cloud headsets for the different systems, the PS4, the Xbox, PC, cross-platform, of course. And I've really been a fan of their comfort, especially as somebody who for years has been a really big Sennheiser fan, been a fan of those more expensive, higher end audio series of headsets. There's always been at times a question of comfort with some of them. And currently I would have to say those are by far the most comfortable, enough that I've fallen asleep. They also sound good enough, but I've fallen asleep while listening to music with them in bed, which is quite rare for me. It's something that I don't like anything like that. And those, I've just fallen right asleep, woke up the next day, and they're still on and music's still playing. Neura is another different set of headphones. They obviously, I think, because of the way they're set up, they probably have the best soundstage, best presence of any headset I've ever owned in my life. But that is because they are a bit unique. They're a mix of a normal headset with earbuds. The headset handling the bass and the mids and the earbuds handling those higher end frequencies. They're fantastic. They're a bit less comfortable, I would say, than Clouds, because I'm not a big fan of earbuds anyway. Never really liked something like that. But when I'm playing music and doing reviews of different kinds, those are definitely the ones I go to. But I also go to Clouds too to verify that whatever sound's going on and whatever engine can be translated between the high end and the low end headsets. I'm really, really happy with those. But again, a little bit of a comfort issue there. Let's see. What do you think about EA not coming to E3? And this has been a number of people who've asked this question. I really do want to cover it. I'm excited, but there's a little bit of hesitation on my part when I say this. And here's the reason why. Just because EA isn't coming does give a chance for, let's say, smaller AA, maybe AAA titles that weren't going to be shown, and different companies to show different elements at E3 that maybe we wouldn't have got the limelight on, because the press is always covering the big three. They're covering, and Sony included in this, they're covering Sony, they're covering EA, Activision, that. And with EA not being there, this could help them. However, if you look into the resources, you can see this on GDC's website, where they cover a ton of different developer talks. Various developers have talked about this overall, the amount of money and resources required with time and just planning for an E3 vertical slice is quite, well, it's extraordinarily difficult. And the fact that many of them probably weren't prepared for EA to not be there and maybe that time to be available, or at least the eyes on to be available, doesn't necessarily mean they can cover something, doesn't necessarily mean they can make something. They may throw together a trailer, but of course you want your trailer to be good, which also takes resources from your main game. So I think it's great in some ways because E3, despite a lot of, let's say, you know, companies doing their own events, E3 is its own thing, and people that aren't just major gamers go there. So it is a good place to still show your wares, I think. It's still a good place to really put your best foot forward. But the timing, at least on the EA announcement, is close enough that I'm not 100% sure Vertical Slice will be able to be made by many developers. And it might just be maybe a playable first level, which you could possibly do if you just have people standing over the top of anybody playing the game and you say, hey, you know, you can play whatever you want in the first level, but you can't go beyond. But a lot of times, especially with that many people testing it, you'll get a break or you'll get some kind of bug that, of course, is expected. But then you got the inevitable YouTube videos about it. So I like the idea of it, I would say, in theory, but I'm not 100% sure how it's going to play out for those AA and single A titles, the B budget titles, which I'm a big fan of. I would like to see them get some time on, but I'm not 100% sure that's going to be as easy as I just say it. It may take quite a bit more work. Let's see. Why is HDR so confusing? Becky is asking. So HDR is high dynamic range lighting. It also comes with a brightness scale and high color gamut. There's various different things there, but HDR really is the next step in color grading. It's the next step in coloring and how a game or a movie looks. The reason why HDR is so confusing, well, there's really two. The first is, when you look at most of the time, when you plug something into the back of a TV, there's an intelligence there. It's called a handshake, digital handshake for HDMIs. They do a handshake and they say, okay, this is an HDMI signal at 1080p, and this is what we're displaying, and boom. But it's a pretty dumb handshake. What I mean by that is nothing is really watching over it to verify that it's done correct. Also, that digital signal, 1080p resolution, is 1080p wherever you go. Even if there's, let's say, some displays back in the day that would pretend they were 1080p and they weren't, or something like that, overall they are now. But with HDR, you have a completely different situation. And this is really where Microsoft got slammed when they were talking about HDR years ago, talking about different things that they wanted to do. And they said, we wanted more high quality pixels. And people were like, whatever, what does that mean? Well, it really does mean HDR. They were ahead of the game, even though Windows hasn't been, but they certainly have been with their consoles. So is Sony. Getting HDR on there is great. But that intelligence doesn't actually translate during the handshake when you plug a system in. So your TV, whether it be a Sony or a Panasonic, a Vizio, something like that, might be different than mine, which might be a Samsung. And the differences could be in the brightness, which is a big deal right now. A lot of times right now, you're having a lot of companies flat out lying, saying HDR on their box when they're 300 lumens or 300 nits, depending on how you talk about the brightness level. But nits is really the level of brightness. If you really consider it, like, I guess one match is one nit, then 300 is the brightness of 300 of those, 1,000, 2,000, and so forth. And then the game has to, and here we go, even more confusing, the game has to be mastered to a particular level. And if the level is different, and then your TV is displaying at a different brightness, you can get some issues there. But you can also just get issues between TVs when there's a lie going on and a company says they have HDR, but they really don't. They say they have 20/20 color gamut and they really don't, or they have poor color grading overall. This is something you should check out. You can go to Artings. They do really good reviews. They don't cover some stuff I would really like them to cover, but overall you can still get a good idea of what's going on there. With HDR, what you have is a newer technology, and it's a technology that is at a much higher definition of change than 1080p, 4K, or 8K, because that's really, if you think about it, little mini, if you want to break it down, those are the pixels, those are the displays, but this is adjusting each one of those at various levels. And that's why HDR can be so confusing, not only from a technical standpoint, but from a standpoint of the games, if you're talking about gaming, and movies, if you're talking about movies. Additionally, another thing that's very confusing is some devs don't really know how to implement HDR correctly in their games yet. It's taking a while. their testing, their adjustments, their calibrations within the games can be quite poor. And it can be a point where you don't really know what you're changing. If you think about it this way, a lot of people are very confused between the difference of brightness and gamma, and that's not even included in HDR. And that's two different brightness settings for two different things, mid and shadows, tones, and of course your highlights, and then the screen brightness itself. Now with HDR, you have even more. You have your HDR highlights and you have all of these different settings. And that's why it can be so confusing, especially when you plug a game in, you go, I want to change my HDR and it shows something. It's like, what do you want your white to be white parchment? And you're like, what the fuck does that mean? White parchment? No, I want it to be white. Like you want to be able to just go ahead and slide something up and down and figure it out quite easily. And that's not the way it goes. And of course, once again, with your TV, it's not as well. Additionally, when it comes to TVs, usually you can get away with some of the dumb settings that come with a TV profile when you first buy it. Now, what I mean by get away with dumb settings is there's usually various settings you can go to, like sports mode or action mode or blah, blah, blah mode, whatever it may have you may be able to do. And you may get away with it and have a pretty good picture. It's not going to be accurate or as accurate as a lot of people want, but it's going to be something that you can see the difference when you go from, let's say, 720p to 1080p to 4K. With HDR, it's a whole other ballgame of switches. So I would suggest you go online, you start looking at websites, how to adjust the HDR in my TV, how to make it look right, and that. Also, if you have a game mode and you're playing on an HDR TV, please make sure your game mode is on. Almost 99% of the time right now, game mode on will turn some of the extra bullshit processing off on your screen and give you increased input. And when it comes to, or input lag, it'll decrease it. When it comes to the speed there, especially with HDR and a lot of TVs, you can get horrendous delay in your input, up to 120 milliseconds at times. And that can really ruin your gaming experience. You can end up trying to play around with first-person shooter on a controller. If you're a console gamer, third-person game, and you're like, why is this not controlling right? That's why. Next up, should resources be shared in games or from sequel to sequel? This is Metal Gal Solid. I love your username. So should resources be shared in games or from sequel to sequel? Yes and no. Yes, because just because the fucking word the was used in a book 10,000 years ago doesn't mean that we suddenly magically can't use the word the now. So I think when you look at some resources, it makes sense. For example, and I've talked about this, if you're getting a good high-quality M16 sample for your game, and then you're making a sequel, and that M16 sample is still what I would consider current, it still has enough, it's got enough bit rate, it was recorded at a high enough rate, all those kind of things, then there's absolutely nothing wrong. And in actuality, it's incredibly intelligent to reuse that asset. You don't want to go out there and say, hey, for no reason, let's record another M16 sound, right? Now, when it comes to textures, when it comes to models, that technology moves a little quicker. And that technology has a few more discrete levels that I think a lot of gamers notice more easily. And you get muddy textures, you get lack of detail in some textures. But many games, and people don't realize this, actually have their texture detail set incredibly high. And then the game comes and it gets a lower version of that. Or they have the high version somewhere on their computer system, and they've compressed it to fit onto whatever medium they're delivering in a current gen system. So the next gen, they technically could. Now, some people be like, well, I can tell this rock was used in the last game. That's not necessarily a horrible idea. What you really should do, and this is why Bob Ross didn't just say, fuck it, and switch paint companies every single time he did a painting. That'd be ridiculous. But it's how you use it, right? It's the finite ways in which you can and the infinite ways in which you should, and those two come together. And I think for a lot of developers, they try to figure out ways to do that. They try to figure out ways to save resources so those resources can be put on making a different story, recording new voice lines, things that can't just be shared between games. I think it makes a lot of sense in some aspects, not in all though. And I think we're seeing an intelligent use of it in some games and not in others. And companies look at that and they sort of figure out what people are reacting to and what they're not. Especially when we jump up in technology. If you have a sequel, let's say, in the same generation of technology on consoles, maybe not on PCs, but on consoles, or maybe in the same generation of PC cards, where you're not magically using some new type of algorithm for compression or something like that, then You know, that double use, that does make sense in some cases. It really just does depend on how you put it all together. Just like a great author can write a great original, you know, book, and then the second book sucks, and then the third book's awesome again. And you're like, well, the words are the same, the characters are the same. It's how you put it together. I think that when it comes down to it, maybe we should worry a little less about counting every asset and making sure it's brand new because we uphold some weird moral law where we require that, and look more holistically at a game and its presentation and how it's created. Let's see. Why has the industry moved from full complete games at launch to shells of games that are completed through updates? Ben from Twitter. Good question, Ben. So, first of all, as somebody who grew up with the Apple IIe, I can tell you right now, these are not the only times we have had games that did not work day one or had horrendous bugs day one or did not have all their content day one. We've seen games where we absolutely know, especially last gen and probably the gen before it, very occasionally, where stuff was cut for a sequel or stuff was cut for a DLC. Now, we for sure know stuff was cut for sequels, even in Halo, where things were adjusted, moved forward as Halo 2 came around and they tried to figure out, you know, what they had and what, you know, the amount of time that they had to work on it. So when you're looking at a situation like this and you're looking at where we are right now, where we are with gaming, where we are with how these titles are delivered, I think it really does come down to the fact that a lot of developers hit that gold status, we call it gold, and they're already working on something else. And what occurs is, two things. One, this is for sure happening. And two, there are cases where it is not, and it's a developer taking advantage of the current medium, which is digital delivery. So the first one is games where they're just not done, they're buggy, they require a download day one to even run. We've seen that. Unacceptable, should stop instantly. But to really step back and look at the technology, there's another course of action there that is definitely, I personally believe, is definitely intelligent, and that's using the actual technology that in which you're delivering into, and you're delivering into a digital age, and you can do these hot fixes. I mean, I grew up in a time when if there was a bug in a game, you would read about it in a magazine. They'd say, don't do this or it'll corrupt your game. And there was nothing you could do, nothing. I had multiple games like that. Even back in the PS3 and the 360 days, we actually had games where those kind of issues pretty much existed, and we never knew if a patch would come. The bright side of this is that those can be delivered right away, and they absolutely should. And we need to really be intelligent as consumers to try to identify which is which, but also at the same time not go on instant witch hunts if something is happening, and at the same time not let a company just get away with it if we feel that they're doing it too much, or if there's in particular a game that's released and just doesn't run on day one without a patch. That's unacceptable. It just makes no sense. If they want to deliver it digitally and say that's how you get it, I would much rather have that be done than a console game or a game you buy, you open it up, and it's either the disc with fucking an installer or the disc with a damn code in it. That's just ridiculous. Figure your shit out. So it's a good question. As you can tell with all these questions, there's sort of a difference on both sides, and nothing is clear cut or dry when it comes to gaming. Let's see. How do you keep going, Jesse A? I don't know. I love gaming. I love it. I love gaming. I love talking to you guys. I love the communication between all of us. And I think when it comes down to it, I think you can be serious about your job and very serious about it, but not necessarily take it as serious as some people think, and certainly not keep that seriousness when you've created something and it's out there and there's not much you can do about it. I think what you have is a lot of people get connected. They get their ego connected to whatever they've made. You see it on Twitch and YouTube, and there's arguments back and forth. And to me, I think a lot of times you just create something, you put it out there, you make sure you're not making a mistake. Of course, you're definitely taking input, but at the same time, you have to remove yourself a bit from it, right? It's almost like you'll hear an actor say, hey, listen, once I was done with that movie, I can't really apologize for it anymore. And should you? Right? Sort of dumb. So for me, I feel that you create. You always pay attention to improvements that could be made, but you also have to just remove yourself a bit from it, because we've seen the burnout. We've seen the breakdowns. We've seen the just I mean, breaking apart of channels before, behind the scenes, between people, if there's multiple people running the channel, single, what have you, and it can get really ugly. It can get really aggressive. And that to me is a sign of people just absolutely holding on far too hard. Sometimes you have to realize that there are things that are far more important in life than a video game preview, a video game review, something that I do, something that somebody else does, a music video you may do, what have you. You go on. People are getting cancer every day. People are dying every day. Those are the things that really, really, really matter in the really in the big scheme of things. And this kind of stuff, you just sort of have to say, eh, and move on. Doesn't mean you can't stand your ground, but at some point you have to really realize if, as they say, that is the ground you want to die on. I think I answered that overall. Aren't you afraid that the way you structure your reviews by putting audio, graphics, gameplay, fun factor on the same level could be hindering for you? I mean, games are so varied and much more than the sum of their parts, it sometimes feels irrelevant. The hell. I like that name. No, in fact, I would say the last poll I did, over 50% of people ended up coming to the channel because of that. And I think what happens is a lot of times people feel, especially hindering, you really have to identify. Hindering really means that there is a possibility of something occurring that is greater than if you stop whatever you're doing. And we've tested that out. And there's been times where I've tested it with different people who have watched on Discord. I've tested it with patron videos, and I've tested it on accident, even forgetting a category in the video reviews. It absolutely has shown without a shadow of a doubt that the way it's set up, it absolutely works. In fact, last time I ran a poll, over 40% of people just found the channel and liked it due to sound, music, and voice alone. Now, you can't just throw sound, music, and voice in your review. That's going to be ridiculous if you don't know those things. If you want to become a reviewer and you want to throw something in there that maybe nobody else is really covering, you should brace those as categories if that works for you as a delivery medium. One of the things that really comes up is, especially what I get, is a lot of people saying that they're really getting burned out on the podcast format of reviews, the blather reviews. And I use the blather review just simply because that's what was said to me. It's not necessarily what I would call them, but the talky reviews, because they meander a lot. And with me, I cut those into categories, and then I'm in the categories together, because one of the things that I think is so tangible and is so noticeable and is so important is, for example, how sound impacts gameplay. And very rarely do I see that covered. In fact, that's why I started the channel. But a lot of people don't know how to, you know, discuss sound. They may not understand discrete sound channeling. They may not understand the technology behind it. So they can't cover that. And that's fine if they want to do a different style. But for me, I can. And I think sound, music, and voice, and covering how those interact and change. Does the sound change the gameplay? Does the voice change the gameplay? And they absolutely can. Do those things adjust? Does the music change the gameplay? It's very important. Does it change the fun factor? Do the graphics change? When a guy talks voice and he looks like crap, graphics, how do those interact? And to me, that is just, at least in my own opinion, the way that works best for me and how I deliver information on those reviews. And by testing it, I've found that it absolutely ends up being the truth and what works for my fans. In fact, I would say I would not have nearly as many subscribers if I did it in the very atypical podcast format. A lot of people, when they went to podcast format, thought everybody was going to switch, not realizing that many people out there didn't want to switch, didn't want to go to that route, and still wanted a more condensed style. And that's why I do Fun Factor as well. I think Fun Factor, once you understand where I'm coming from, you can understand how I deal with Fun Factor, what makes a game fun for me, and you can work with me and sort of get it as we go and talk about the review, and I think that works great. So, no, I think, in fact, it's probably the one thing I'm the most excited about is how that all came together and how those reviews have sort of braced themselves in the bookends of those categories. Let's see. What am I doing next? Well, I'm trying to push the Anchor. If you get a chance, I would love for you to go there and just follow. That's where the podcasts are all uploaded in MP3 format. You can also check on iTunes, ACG on iTunes. It'll come up as the best gaming podcast. That's just because right at that point, I had no other name for it. But it's there on iTunes. I would absolutely love for you guys to go listen, rate it. That all those kind of things help. That's what I'll be doing right now today, is a lot of technical work, doing The Division, some huge coverage there. Luckily, Got some cool insider stuff on that that I'll be covering that I don't think anybody has, which was crazy because I thought some people would have some of the data. We'll certainly be covering Sekiro in some way. That's, you know, one of the issues with Sekiro is they randomly, around the same time the previews came out, which was a disaster having those previews, different people arguing, saying some things were impossible, other people showing it wasn't right on screen. It was, oh my God, that was one of the reasons why I hate previews. But I will be covering that. It's just that they've announced that they've decided to withhold review copies out of the blue. So originally the plan was to have them. That was everybody's sort of ideas moving forward, at least in the communications I had with a couple different entities, one in the developer itself and then others. And then that just magically went away. And so it's going to be interesting to see how Sekiro does. And if there's a reason for that, or if it's just something stupid and they just decided to do it for the hell of it. Bill D. Killams. Why patron? So I have hair on my nose. Why patron? You know, I think this might be related to, you know, why I don't use other forms of donation sites and stuff like that. Patron does work for what it needs to do, which is the bulk of what I need to cover. I need to pass down information for you guys, get you guys into Discord, and some of these other sites don't do that. It is also, or was the biggest when I started. I think it's the biggest still. It really does help me continue to create you guys this stuff. Whether I'm buying the games on the street and giving you guys an early review, which I've done multiple times and will continue to do. I'll try to do it with some of the games I've mentioned today. Or just giving you guys access to the Discord or sending the poker chips like we're doing now or giving you guys some merch. It just works. It doesn't always work perfect, but no system does. When it comes to Patreon, why Patreon, if you're asking why I ask for it, it's because, frankly, Patreon helps keep the lights on. Looking at other patrons and trying to identify what you guys get, I feel that, you know, this ACG in particular gives a shit ton, whether it be the merchandise, whether it be, you know, the access to stuff. And I never hold anything back when it comes to early release. You'll never see me saying, you know, this video is only available for patrons early or something like that. Doesn't even make sense. But when it comes to other stuff like merch and like physical tangible stuff, when it comes to running the escape rooms or Dungeons and Dragons or getting you guys servers so we can play games, this is all stuff we did. Matter of fact, the Insurgency server worked out really well. So I like that kind of stuff. And I think that's what I can give you guys. But at the same time, if you want to help the channel, you can. And I think when they say why, it's like, listen, I'm not a giant entity with thousands upon thousands upon thousands of subscribers. And unfortunately, due to the way YouTube runs, it's not footing the bill at all. So Patreon really does help. Listening on Anchor helps because there's little ads that start and that's just a little bit. And of course you can follow me on Twitch, ACG on Twitch. That's what I've been doing a lot of. I've got the live podcast, which have so helped us be on time. It's crazy because in the past a podcast had come and go and there'd be a technical issue because of that direct feedback from Twitch instantly where people are saying, yeah, you're live. Everything looks good, blah, blah, blah. It's just absolutely helped. And that's once again, that organic chemistry between the crowd, the people listening, the people watching the channel, and myself, and in that case, also the people on those podcasts, Banter Files as well, where there's this amazing communication, and I would not have it any other way. I absolutely think it's vital. I think it's amazing. You guys lift me up, man. There's times where I'm just like, what the fuck? And, you know, somebody will come in, there'll be a new patron, and I can't describe to you what it's like. It's amazing to see somebody put their, you know, money where their mouth is because, you know, I say a lot of times, if I've saved you any money ever, or I found you a game you didn't think you'd like or didn't know about and you ended up liking, you know, throw a couple bucks into the patron. It can be 1/10 of what it saved. It can be 1/100 of what maybe I've saved or 1/100 of the amount of fun that you felt you got from a game. If it's just a dollar, that's fine. But I get people coming in. And then like I have the level for Patreon where I help people with their channels. And we right now we have a couple people in that level where I'm helping them set up their channels to just not make the mistakes I made when I started, which is quite easy to make. And you see it repeated ad nauseum by every single person out there who starts a channel, all of the same problems. But why Patreon for me really is I'm not an ex you know, staffer at some big company. I don't have a huge following. It may seem like I do, but you know, you only get about anywhere from 10 to 20, maybe 30 to 50% of your viewers being actually from subscribers. So though I have a lot of subscribers, even on the greatest reviews, many of those views come from people who aren't subscribed. And, you know, many times those people are using ad blockers and that stuff, and Patreon just really helps. It absolutely, it changed the way I could feel about what I was creating and the speed at which I needed to do so. But now I've found myself doing more and having more interaction than I did in the past because I'm so excited because I don't have to worry about some of those things in the past. I don't have to worry about the stupid stuff. People may be looking behind me and being like, what's the moose doing in the background? That's just basically a joke about Hunter Call of the Wild, a game I've been playing a lot on Twitch. Ended up counting how many people bought this game on Twitch. It's an older game. It's from Avalanche. It's like 2 or 3 years old. Went online, even got a little tweet from one of the developers who was like, dude, we ended up actually noticing a bump in our sales because you were doing these streams. But it's a great game, and this was just a joke. I had to find what looked like a study with the giant moose that I had caught. It's just a hunting game on Twitch that I've really liked covering. Looking on Twitter one last time before we go, I'll verify that there's no questions here. I want to say, again, thanks to everybody who supports in any way, even a tweet. That shit is absolutely so, I guess, integral to how the channel works. And you guys have absolutely nailed it. Let's see here. Doesn't look like there's any others other than the ones I've grabbed. Oh. Sean Bro says, why do a few people think that Dark Souls or Bloodborne or Sekiro would be ruined by the addition of optional cheats or an easy mode? That's a good question. We'll end it on that. That's a good question, but I think also this sort of comes in a weird way full circle around to why I said people get burned out creating YouTube channels or creating, you know, being on Twitch and being seen all the time is because they hold too solidly to something. What they're really saying is they don't want the initial design of Bloodborne, the initial design of Sekiro, the initial design of Neo, the initial design of Bloodborne to be impacted by those things. If the original design is still based upon whatever normal difficulty they go with, and then they have an easy mode, most people, other than the moral weirdness that goes on, where they're like, pip, pip, gentlemen, the only way to play this is on hard, most people actually aren't like that. They just don't want the core of the title adjusted. And I get that, and I think I understand it, and I think it's a valid point, absolutely, for sure. This is something that we could talk about with microtransactions in the same way. You just interchange these. You don't want your core design being adjusted by it. Once you remove that and you look at, could there be an easy mode so that you can experience a story and maybe you don't have the time to get good, as they say. Maybe you are playing other games. Maybe this is your first title. A lot of people like to pretend that magically somehow everybody has the same historical, factual knowledge about a game series prior to the one that's coming out, just like they do, which is really a very egocentric kind of thought process, because many people don't. We have people getting consoles daily. In fact, just in the Discord, somebody yesterday got their first console ever, and another person 2 days ago got their first PC ever, which means this could be their very first of these kind of games. And those kind of modes, hey, you know what? It might work for them to be able to jump into. I don't know, but maybe for them it would be. I think, once again, most people, most sane people, most people who can disconnect themselves a little bit and look at it as a product and not their best friend. It's like, yo, Joe Bob Dark Souls. Yeah, it's not. It's not your best friend. It's a game. Deal with it. Live with it. Move on. If somebody else wants an easy mode, as long as the core gameplay demographic and the way it's created from the very start is not adjusted, I don't see an issue with that. You can up your damage, down their damage, turn it up, down, whatever, whatever way you want to do that, I think that's completely fine. But that's just me. Some people probably have some argument against that that I haven't thought of. I would be hard-pressed, though, to agree, because I think when it comes down to it, at some point, there's a pseudo-moralism going on there that I just don't really care about and don't really think makes a lot of sense. So anyway, that's it for me. I want to thank everybody here for watching the Y videos. These are a blast to do. They dropped off. just like always, when something gets really busy, something else has to drop off. And with the Y videos, just because I've been doing all the Twitch and gaming behind the scenes, and we do so many games in Discord now. That Discord is amazing. And we have over 1,000 people going in there and talking about games. We have chats. We have been watching the UFCs together, where everybody buys a UFC wherever they live. And then we jump into a chat and we watch the UFC in a row. It's such a fantastic time that it's hard, you know, occasionally to jump out of that and create a Y video when I'm just having such a good time doing a game in a server and sort of defragging in that way. Both allow for me to defrag. One just requires a little bit more technical expertise. So anyway, that's it for me. If you get a chance, I would love for you to go to Patreon. You know, check it out. If I've saved you any money, or if I have found a game you didn't think you'd like, go there. iTunes, Anchor, both of those, ACG, the best gaming podcast. Yes, I know. Sounds like an egotistical name. It's actually not. It's just I had no other thing to name it at the time when they were asking me. So you can go there. You can subscribe. And Twitch, ACG on Twitch. That's it for me. Oh, by the way, follow me on Twitter. If you're not, it always helps to have more people discussing games. Peace out and enjoy the rest of your week.